The best way to learn a language? Immersion. Living where the language is spoken and using it every day. But if that's not in the cards this year, you can still learn a language the second best way. And that's with Babbel. Be a better you in 2024 with Babbel, the science-backed language learning app that actually works. Don't pay hundreds of dollars for private tutors or waste hours on apps that don't really help you speak the language. Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons are handcrafted by over 200 language experts and help you start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. Babbel's designed by real people for real conversations, and their tips and tools are approachable, accessible, rooted in real-life situations, and delivered with conversation-based teaching so you're ready to practice what you've learned in the real world. Here's a special limited-time deal for our listeners. Right now, get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription at babbel.com/bluewire. That's 60% off at babbel.com/bluewire, spelled BABBEL.com/bluewire. Rules and restrictions apply.
We got live baseball games to talk about in spring training. We have a live pitch clock to talk about, too. All coming up next on the RotoWire Fantasy Baseball Podcast. Happy Sunday night, everybody. Welcome to the RotoWire Fantasy Baseball Podcast. We're sponsored by Fantrax, the most customizable free commissioner service in fantasy sports, and Underdog Fantasy, home of the biggest best ball contests in the industry. I am Scott Jenstedt, joined as always on Sunday nights by Jeff Erickson. Jeff, 5 weeks in, I finally didn't trip my words in the intro. This is a big moment.
You're hitting your stride, dude. Yeah. It's early. You're peaking too soon.
As you say, it's almost March. It only took a little bit more than a month for me not to mess up the first two sentences of the podcast.
Hey, achievement unlocked.
Yeah. How are you?
I'm good. I would have been better if Eric Cole would have made that putt on the playoff hole and we would, you know, moved on and won or chipped better when he had a chance on 18. Lots of things that could have gone a little bit better on that one there. But still, I got a guy that finished second up fresh off the waiver wire. So that was good.
I crunched some numbers in our golf league. It's February 26th and I'm actually mathematically eliminated. That's a pretty impressive
achievement. Dude, I looked at the standings. Yeah, you're having a rough run. That's like me in the one and done contest. I'm just terrible.
It has gone sideways really fast. We had a couple really big purses in there too that like separated everybody even more. And it's
but I got a lot left still, dude.
A lot less. I obviously kid, but wow, it's been a bad start there. Yep. But anyway, we're here to talk a bunch of baseball. We've got actual games taking place in spring training. It's always a fun thing when you flip on the TV and there's actually games being played. But I wanted to ask you, in spring training, you know, you hear all this noise. You see Vlad go hit two home runs and you see Jason Dominguez hit a home run. What do you pay attention to in spring? I mean, throw injuries out of this because obviously we know that if someone gets really hurt, that obviously impacts everything. But what do you take away from the actual gameplay results, how guys look? Is it anything at all? If so, what is it?
Yeah, it's a lot of things. This is where I prepared, Scott. I looked at the outline and I actually wrote notes this time.
You told me you wrote notes before we started actually getting on here, and it's hard for me to believe. And
straight I'm really up, proud yes, of you. I understand. Awesome. Yeah. It just shows my dedication to the craft all these years. The fact that I had to highlight it reveals what a sham I am.
To be fair, I wasn't going to bring it up first. You brought it up, so we're good.
All right, so there was a Susan Slusser note today on Sean Manaea and how he was hitting 94 to 96, which is well above what he normally works at. Typically this time of year, it's 89 to 90. Is he peaking early? Is he trying to turn over a new leaf with a new team, trying to show that he's ready, embarrassed after last year? I can see that. Or did he go to driveline? You're going to see a lot of did he go to driveline.
He did go to driveline.
Yeah. You're going to see a lot of that.
He actually credited driveline his quote afterwards. I think it's one of those drinking game things at this point on Twitter with driveline.
And it doesn't have to be driveline. It could be like the Wake Forest thing that Ian Anderson did, you know?
Oh yeah, that's right.
Just point is you have to be like showing like, okay, well he did this extra work, put in the extra work in the off season. I like seeing that. I think that's a good thing. Working on a new pitch, you know, it can be, we're adding a new one, reintroducing an old one that you haven't used. I did a note on Luke Weaver today. I mean, come on, it's Luke Weaver, but trying to work in a curveball because guess what? The fastball got cuffed around a lot last year. So you better have a curveball and he barely threw it last year. So, okay, that could work. Batting orders. That matters a little bit. Yoshida, there was a note on him saying he's probably not going to lead off after all. That changed my projection for him a little bit, gave him fewer runs, fewer plate appearances for a little bit for that matter too. That matters. Defense, player playing a new position. If you remember Eugenio Suarez playing shortstop for the Reds,
I do.
Remember how well that went and how it destroyed his batting season too. Spencer Steer today had one error and another misplay, and he's trying to win the third base job. He's not a full-time third baseman, so that's something to watch a little bit there. Those are two Reds examples. You can see that in a lot of different places. So you definitely look for players playing out of position a little bit there. I think those are the main things. K percentage. If you're looking for a stat, swinging strike rate and K percentage, those stabilize pretty quickly. Eric Segrist did it something on the site a long time ago.
Pitchers and hitters or one or the
pitchers.
Other?
I'm going pitchers here, okay. But I might apply to hitters too.
Okay.
But if you're getting – we're going to talk about Trevor Rogers later on. That's on our list. Spoiler alert. But his swinging strike rate dropped a ton last year.
Yeah.
And if he's getting swings and misses in spring training and it's back at the rate when he was so good in 2021, you'll have my attention.
Yeah, I think the adding a pitch thing is really interesting to me too, because like you want to – adding a pitch is great, but he's got to be able to do it well. And I think you and I talked – God, COVID like makes time go away now, but I think it was like 3 years ago. We were sitting before the main event. We were talking about Frankie Montas, and like the whole thing was a splitter. And like guys in the team are like, not only is this a new pitch, but this is like a nasty pitch.
Right.
Like, we both ended up taking him, and he pitched really well till he got suspended, but he was really, really good that year. And it was because of that splitter. You look at that splitter, like the swing strike rate was huge on it. He was really good. So it's a combo of, and you want to see it and you want to read about it too a little bit. So you want a little bit of both, but they had the clip of Andrew Painter throwing to Kyle Schwarber the other day, and Schwarber hit a home run. But like you hear guys, they talk about Painter like, my God, this guy's for real. It doesn't seem like he's 19. Like guys talking about players like that is kind of interesting to me too. I don't read, obviously they're gonna be nice about their teammates and stuff. I don't pay attention to guys talking about themselves, but guys talking about their teammates, I do a little bit when it comes to stuff like that.
Oh yeah, 100%. And if you do a blanket dismissal of everything that happens in spring training, you're gonna miss out. Now,
does it mean that one day someone's hitting third in the lineup, you move them up five rounds? With lineup stuff, you want to see it consistently, but you can see a manager like there are games that where they throw games away, like, oh, there's six guys not starting, but there are games when everybody's starting, you're like, oh, well, this I can see that what the manager's thinking in this regard and who he's hitting where, and it does bring some value in there with the lineup stuff.
And we track that, by the way, on RotoWire. You get even in spring training, you get like the last 5 days worth of the lineups there. And that's really, I think that's valuable. And you can check that out that's one of the things you can find on RotoWire, rotowire.com/pod. Get that free trial, a peek behind the paywall. Many, many things that we have on the site, but that's one. Mike Curlin was always good at that. He was one of the guys that, he made a bigger name for himself. He was already, was already doing podcasts by the time, but that caught fire, him like being on top of everything there. Peter asked about Yoshida. Yeah, we mentioned that. Yeah, does that matter that he's not necessarily enough? Yes, I think it does matter. Because it's just fewer at plate appearances, fewer chances to run. Maybe you give him more RBI and fewer runs because he's going to be a middle of the order hitter instead of a leadoff hitter. This could also change on April 9th also. That Alex Cora could be lying the whole time or just changes his mind.
But the fact he came out and said it means like it's obviously in his head he's thought about it. So that was it was definitely an interesting quote there. And it's funny you brought Manaea at the beginning. I mean, the thing with Manaea is a different pitcher, whereas his velocity is like he's had success in the past when he's been at 92, 93. And then when he gets down to 90, 91, he becomes much more hittable. His stuff, the rest of his stuff doesn't work as well. I've sat up close to watching Manaea pitch. And when he's throwing 92, 93, you're like, wow, this guy could be really, really good. And then you watch him up close at 89, 90, and you're like, wow, I don't know how this guy gets anybody out. It's weird that 3 miles an hour does that, but man, if he was really throwing 94, 95, he becomes a completely different pitcher.
For a no-hitter, try and predict. Right?
Yeah, against the Red Sox, yeah.
Yeah, came close to a perfect game, if I recall correctly.
But I remember opening weekend a few years ago, Christy and my wife, where I were like third row in the Coliseum, which, I'm really hard ticket to get. I'm not bragging about that. But, I mean, and you're up close, and you're like, he was throwing 92. You're like, this guy, I don't know how he hits this guy. Like, he feels like he lets the ball go from a foot in front of you because he's so big when he's throwing hard. And it's just amazing what a difference is. And that's one guy where velocity has been a key factor in how good he's been each and every year.
Absolutely. And 2 miles an hour makes that much of a difference. That's funny thing too.
Yeah. It suddenly makes your changeup look better. Makes your slide look better. Makes everything look better. Our friend Justin Mason asked, where does Andrew Painter go in the main events? I promise that is someone we'll be discussing a little bit later here. We're going to do late pitchers and late pitchers. So late starters and late relievers. So we will talk about Painter. Obviously whether Painter makes the opening day roster and is the fifth starter makes a massive difference. His price will jump exceptionally high from where it is now. If he gets named the fifth starter over Falter, so that'll be a lot of how he looks. But then you know what they decide to do, and they send him back down, or he's gonna we'll give him 2 months in the minors. I mean, he's 19. That's it's pretty wild. Yeah. I think he turns 20 pretty soon. But
another guy like that is Ben Joyce on the Angels too.
The guy that almost took Mookie Betts' head off in the first pitch of the game today?
Yes. Yes, that guy. There's some talk about him being in the closer mix. I mean, they drafted him for that express purpose. So drafted him in the third round. He throws up to 105. Did, by the way, go 1-2-3 inning, 2 strikeouts and a pop-up. So, you know, it's way too early to make anything out of that. I gave him a projection for half a season, but another one of those guys you got to watch for.
Was he that Tennessee guy that throws 105? Is that where that's where he came from? Okay, I remember
that's the one. That's the very same.
I remember the Tennessee guy that came in and literally was gassing 105. You're like, what the heck is going on here? So, interesting. The other thing, obviously, the big note this weekend. What did you think about the pitch clock?
Growing pains. You know, I came into this being against it in the first place. Just for the record, I don't think we need to hurry up games that much. Yes, there are times when in late games where there's a lot of too much stalling. I get that. I really don't, you're seeing a lot of prejudged opinions out there. Todd and I were talking about that on the SiriusXM show today. The fans seemed more engaged. You know this how? Really? After one day?
Especially in spring training. No one's engaged in spring training.
Call BS.
I don't care if it's slow or fast. I've been to many, many years of spring training. We go almost every year. No one's engaged in spring training. You're there having some drinks, hanging out with friends. You might be watching some rookies in the first innings, but nobody's engaged in spring training.
Right. And I don't want to be hurried. I want to have my second beer, third beer, as the case may be, when I'm at a game especially. But I guarantee, the people that work the game, whether they're players, not even necessarily players, but, rights holders, managers, beat writers especially, they want the quicker game. And I appreciate they got a job to do and no one wants them to, because it's not just the game itself. I get that. And there's nothing worse than step off, lob, throw to first, all that stuff. I get, I don't know. It seems a little tight. Seeing that one game get finished because the batter wasn't looking at the pitcher, it strikes me as a little bit of an upshow, but I understand they have to call it now because if you're going to call it in the season, it's kind of like, the holding play in the Super Bowl. If it's a penalty, it's a penalty. If it's a violation here, it's a violation now, that anytime. So I get it, but no one wants to see a game end that way.
Yeah. So I'm a little different than you. I actually kind of liked it, but I think it's about 3 seconds too fast, which means maybe it's 5 seconds.
I agree.
Like, I think that I love games. I love being games, but like when there's guys walking on the mound for a minute and a half, I'll admit that drives me crazy. Like I suddenly find myself getting a little bit bored and I'm like, but it felt like some of these games, like the pitcher was grabbing the ball and like going and throwing right. And like, he was really worried about it. And I think they'll get used to it at some point and get better at snapping it. I say snapping it with 1 second left, like every NFL team does, at pitching it with 2 seconds left. Cause there's a lot of guys I felt like were throwing it at 7 or 8 seconds left. And it felt really, really hurried to me.
Yeah. So, well, some of that was by design too. Like,
I think it was Nick Martinez.
Matt Scherzer.
Who was
experimenting. He goes, can I start my windup at 8? And he goes, yeah, you can, but has to be at 8. You can't do it before that. Right. And he purposely wants to throw the batter's timing off because of that. The one I saw that caught my eye was James Karinchak. He does a lot of fidgety stuff.
He does, yeah.
He asked for a new ball, and they didn't stop the clock.
Oh.
It kept rolling. And he got – it was on a 1-2 count, and all of a sudden it was 2-2. And then he struck him out anyhow. But it was pretty funny. But, I think pitchers are experimenting with ways to kind of delay. Do I ask for a new ball? Does the catcher lob it back to the pitcher? As Todd was saying, that there are some anecdotes about like minor leaguers seeing that lob back to the pitcher and stealing the delayed steal when they see that there.
Does it start? It starts when the pitcher catches it, or it starts when the catcher throws it?
Supposedly when the pitcher catches it, I think.
Okay.
Because counterproductive to lob it back to him if it's when the catcher threw it. But, those things are going to be like, they're going to see if they can game the system a little bit there. As Jason Stark wrote, it's going to be a shit show. And, doesn't necessarily so. They're all trying to figure it out.
I like the idea. I like a little bit snappier against, but I think the key is I don't really care about how long. I like the pace, though. I think the pace was the thing. I saw someone on Twitter say it's not about time, it's about pace. And I agree with that. I think the pacing of some of these games got brutal. I think Joe Sheehan in his excellent newsletter wrote up about, you know, this is going to be rough in the eighth and ninth inning when that's when you get the tense moments in baseball, and we like that. I that made me think, like, I wonder if, like, you know, like in the NFL and college football, like, they don't stop the clock when you go to bounds unless it's, like, late in the game. Like, there's whatever those – I never know the exact out-of-bounds rules are. But, like, I wonder if there's a way to do it where the first seven innings are one pace, and maybe the eighth and ninth, that you give them a little more leeway. It might be an interesting way to look at it. Because I think that those close – like, you get that, like, Eric Gagne, Barry Bonds matchup. Like, that just – that was so tense because it took so long. It was so drawn out. It hit foul balls and stuff. And you'd hate, like, for a situation like that where Gagne's got to worry about pitching it faster. Like, I get that late in game. So I'm a little torn. Right. I do like a quicker pace, but I really don't want to lose those moments at the end either.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with you on that. But and honestly, I think I see the need for a pitch clock. I get it. I just I just you see reporters dutifully say, well, we saved 25 minutes. Like, I know in spring, especially in spring training, games can drag on forever when they're doing 7,000 pitching changes. Get it. I appreciate it. But at the same time, like, it's kind of funny that, you know, the total time expired. Just stop with that. I don't really need to hear that.
I don't need to hear that either. I like a well-paced game. I don't really care if it's 2 hours and 52 minutes or 3 hours and 4 minutes. Like, I just think that that's kind of silly, but I do like a little bit paced up. Want to say thanks to David in the chat. Really nice comment. Said the best way to end the weekend is listening to us talk baseball. That is very nice. We really appreciate that. Happy to hear, and we appreciate that. Some quick news and notes in the in spring training before we do get. We're talking about a lot of late pitchers. Sia Suzuki with the Cubs having an MRI for oblique soreness. We got a lot of time before the season starts, but boy, that is not what you want to hear to start out your spring training.
He was so trendy lately too.
Yeah.
Our buddy Vlad Sedler got him in the FSGA draft, which is going to end in 2037. But I was like, I kind of wanted to get him there, but so be it. We'll move on to the next league where I can get him. But now, pumping the brakes a little bit there. And, you know, I was kind of looking forward to getting a few shares. I'll still get them, but it's kind of like the Scott Pianowski theory that you don't, you know, injuries are going to happen to your team. You don't want to take present injuries in. I get the debate about injury prone versus actually injured, but this is actually injured. If it turns out to be an oblique strain, we'll find out. We'll see in the next couple of days.
We'll obviously have a ton of news before we need to make some serious decisions, but leaning into that a little bit, I know you did labor draft this week. Yordan Alvarez, I believe, was your first pound pick. Is that correct?
It was. And I knew about the hand because the news broke on Tuesday. We did the draft Tuesday night all along. For about a week I had my draft slot. So I knew I was drafting eighth. Like, oh, I really hope I get Alvarez here. I think there's a clear top seven. I feel like now add Tucker and Alvarez as my top part of my top.
Okay.
Seven.
Yeah. You're going, I thought you meant seven and you get Alvarez eight. So you had Tucker and Alvarez 6-7. Gotcha.
Yeah. And if I don't get them, then do I go Shohei? Do I go Freeman? I don't think I'm going Bobby Witt. I think I did earlier in the draft season before I really had a strong opinion on it and things.
As we get into main event, you're going to see a lot of Cole and Burns in that spot too.
Probably because that's like the adjust because I don't want to take that hitter there. Yeah, sure. And it's funny though. This is labor. No pitcher went in the first round unless you count Shohei. That won't change. I do think there's like a over under on you said at half league, maybe one online league goes pitcherless in the first round, but seems unlikely. I get it there. But at any rate, then the news happened. I'm like, oh, okay. Now I actually have to decide. I still went with them. Betts actually went seven. So, I still had my original set of choices. And I decided just the StatCast numbers are so good. He did what he did, missing 27 games last year anyhow, and still was a top 10 fantasy player. And he dealt with both hand issues. But the fact that he's still not hitting is bothersome.
Yeah, I was going to say the news today was he has not yet started to swing a bat. It's weird because, I mean, he's just so early. We don't know. Like, this could be like last year, you talk about it. He played 135 games, and he was probably – you can make an argument he's the best pure hitter in baseball. Like, I think that's not even a crazy argument to make right now. He was – hard hit rate was 60% last year. Barrel rate was 21%. It's absurd how good the guy is. 37-97, hit 306. I agree with you. I had him in a top seven. I'd like to see him start playing a little bit, though. It's worrisome to me that it's February 26th, and this didn't resolve itself in the offseason more than anything.
Yep. Yep. I mean, we said that about Felix Bautista last week and, you know, but man, it's Jordan Alvarez.
it's just a freaking stud. And he seems to be over the knee issues, which is great. Cause I mean, early in his career, we're like, are his knee, he's so young, are his knees ever going to be fine? And obviously the last 2 years, he's proven the knees are fine, but yeah, this is,
so you know. I'll be curious. We saw a note here, that Matt Leahy was saying, oh wait, wrong one. That wrong comment from Matt. He goes, Alvarez fell to 18th overall in his current DC. And I'm drafting tomorrow night in the Beat Jeff Erickson draft, filled up today. I'm drafting fifth. So I like on the comeback spot there, if he's sitting there in the second round, I'm going to be very hard pressed to let him go, but do I have enough exposure?
That's five. It means 19, it means 20th pick in the back, coming back around.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cause they add up to 25. So yeah, that makes sense. Are you Jose Ramirez or Kyle Tucker at five?
Yes.
If the first four go, Turner, Acuna, Julio, and who else are missing? Oh, Judge.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm probably Ramirez, but yes, I'm happy with either player. Very much.
I'm whatever spot I can get Julio him to last to me is where I'm at. So if that's one, that's fine. But if that's five, I'm good there too.
Coming to me is great too. Yeah. Jose Ramirez, Julio. I mean, six was my first choice. Five was my second choice, I think. Or maybe
so you're that much in on Tucker that you're fine with putting him in that group. You're fine getting six. Cause I prefer, I have a top five. You have a top six.
I used to be top five. I kind of expanded it to six. I also love being in the middle of the drafts. Although I don't think it matters as much in the 12 as it does in the 15s.
I love being in the middle drafts too, but I find it a tougher spot this year, at least so far. It seems
just for the first round, but for the rest of the draft, I mean,
I think second round too, though. I think that kind of seems like there's a drop off, maybe like 18, 19, somewhere in there where you, if you're late in the draft, you feel pretty good about your first two picks. If you're in the middle, you're like, yeah, I got to figure out who to take here.
Yeah, I could see that.
Someone, Uncle Ted in the chat is talking about Oscar Gonzalez. I guess he shouldn't go back two episodes and listen to the fact that I don't really love Oscar Gonzalez this year. Sorry about that. Yeah. I think
Uncle Ted. No.
Yeah. All right. Former listener. Sorry. I'm offending the listeners. I think Oscar chases a little too much to be an all-star this year would be my answer to that. He was first percentile in chase rate last year. I think pitchers are going to figure him out a little bit. I think he's going to be good, but I don't think it's going to be quite in the first half. So I think an all-star game would be a tough score for Oscar.
Yep.
So let's get into late pitchers. I think this is a spot where you know, leagues are heavily impacted. Last year, I had a really good team that we've talked about plenty that ended up with Tony Gonsolin and Kyle Wright late in the draft. Like, you get a late pitcher, it makes up for so much if you get someone that really hits here. But first, a quick note from our sponsors, the Underdog. At Underdog, the fantasy baseball season is underway. There's no better place to play than Underdog Fantasy, the easiest place to play fantasy baseball. Right now, Underdog has MLB best ball tournaments live, including the Dinger, which has $500,000 in total prizes. In best ball, all you do is join a contest, draft your team, and that's it. There's no waivers, no trades, and no in-season management. You draft 20 rounds of players and get the best cumulative scores in your starting lineup. That's three pitchers, three infielders, three outfielders, and one flex each week of the regular season. Getting started is simple. Go to underdogfantasy.com, sign up with the promo code RWMLB, and not only Underdog double your initial deposit up to $100, but you'll also get 6 months of our RotoWire subscription for free. Again, that's Underdog Fantasy, promo code RWMLB. Draft your $100,000 dinger team today.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help.
For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Everyone is talking about magnesium. It's all you hear about. But why? What do we know about magnesium? Well, magnesium is the number one mineral that 75% of Americans are deficient in. If you are a woman over 35, magnesium will help you rediscover balance, energy, and vitality. Magnesium supports more than 300 enzymatic reactions in your body, including those involved in hormonal balance. From functional medicine doctors to mental well-being and female hormone experts, we all know that magnesium is the one mineral to improve all aspects of well-being and health. But which one? Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, the trusted choice recommended by leading experts, with 7 best-absorbed forms of magnesium to ensure your body receives the support it needs for overall well-being. Go to bioptimizers.com/balance today and use code BALANCE10 for 10% off. Support your journey to wellness at bioptimizers.com/balance. Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, your foundation to optimal health and vitality.
So, Jeff, we're going to do late starters first, and we'll talk about some late relievers. I characterize late by back half of the draft in a 15-teamer. So, you know, it works if you're a 12-teamer too, but pick 225 and after. So, obviously, a little bit later round-wise in a 12-teamer, but I figured 225 was about the right spot to call someone late. First guy I would ask you about is someone who had a horrible, horrible 2022. It was Jose Berríos in Toronto. 5.23 ERA. 1.42 whip last year, 172 innings. This is coming off a year. The year before, he was 3.5 and 1.06. So, you know, really valuable pitcher then. Everything fell off for Berríos. It's really troubling to look at. His strikeout rate fell from 26% to under 20%. That's a crazy drop for a guy who's been kind of in the mid or low 20s for the last 5 years before that. Swing strike rate down to 9.3%. Interesting that you look at swing and strike rate between 2020 and 2021, it really dropped off. So maybe we should have seen the strikeout drop at least coming, because the swing and strike rate really dropped off. It dropped off a little bit more. He was 11th percentile in hard hit rate, 8th percentile in the expected batting average against, 5th percentile expecting slugging against. There's not much good here. His ADP is about 240 in drafts right now. What does one do with someone that we thought was going to be one of the aces a few years ago?
I don't think I ever thought he was going to be one of the aces. I think
he felt like he had a lot of hype a few years ago, though. The people loved Jose Berríos.
Well, because of the strikeouts, I get it, but he's always had the outings where you know, he gets cuffed around at bad times, and he took it to another level last year. Obviously, I don't want to dunk on him too much, but he's kind of like a poor man's Luis Castillo in terms of whip. I feel like, you know, he had that 1 year at 106, big year, trade year, contract year, whatever. But otherwise, 132 the year before that, 122 the year before that. You know, it's not like he's ever been like, oh, yeah, I feel like he's going to be a 275, 105 guy ever. It's probably, you know, I think almost this year, it's almost like you could get in on that. The price here is almost an overreaction, unless you think he's just toast, like he's lost the velocity, he's lost the snap on his pitches or something like that. But so it might be the first time I have him in a while, because I didn't like it when he was getting in the fourth and fifth rounds.
Yeah, you always felt like everybody thought he was one step away from being that guy and everybody loved him. You're right about the outings, though. He had 9 outings last year with 5 runs or more. Like, the blow-up outings just kill him. He had two where he gave up 8 runs. Like, those will just kill you. And, I mean, you look closer at some of his pitches, and it's just – he was a different guy last year with the strikeouts. It's hard to trust. It's hard to trust anything you see here, just because it was so rough last year. You look at it. I mean, just everything got hard. Everything got hit hard. It's hard to find anything to get really excited about. He's pitching in the AL East. I mean, I know the schedule's a little bit different this year, and that should help him. But I don't know. You look at his Statcast page for one, and it's not only blue, but it's dark blue across the board.
Yeah. I don't think I'm in on Berríos. I'm thinking out, just to clarify here. I don't think I'm paying. You know, it might be the first time I roster him just because he's so darn cheap. He's a streamer now. That's what I find, use him against weaker opponents, and that's it. But you know, the thing that is concerning, though, is the swinging strike percentage dropped to 9.7%, and it never was elite. Even in his best year was 12.2%.
Yeah. to Uncle Ted in the chat, I didn't say Gonzalez sucked. I just said he's going to have a little bit of struggles in the first half. Next guy I want to talk about is Hunter Brown. We kind of talked about him a little bit last week when we're talking about Lance McCullers being pushed back a little bit, delayed with his injury issues. Hunter Brown would be next guy up. You know, people like Hunter Brown as it was, but now if he were to get a job to start the year. He was really good in AAA last year, 2.55, 1.08 on the whip, strikeout rate over 31%. Walk rate's a little bit high with him. That's probably the one thing he needs to figure out if he's going to be really, really good at major league level. But he only had 20 innings in the majors. He only made two starts. They just kind of eased him in a little bit. Where are you on Hunter Brown? His price is obviously going to go way up. His ADP is about 250 right now. If McCullers, gets delayed even more as we go along here, that's just only going to rise. Are you in on the helium rise on Brown? Or are you going to kind of let somebody else take the bait?
No, back? I'm in on him. I've gotten him. I got him and said FSGA draft.
You guys are at that round by now?
Well, I got him in the 14th round at a 15 teamer. So yes,
that was more of a joke about how you guys weren't that far along.
Yeah, we're cruising up to the.
I didn't know if you're quite in the Hunter Brown range yet.
Yeah, well, to me that is Hunter Brown range, but
I think so too. I was more of a joke. You're still in like the first.
Ha ha! Very funny. Yeah. Min pick now is 140, whew. And that's too early. But is it? It's your prototypical helium guy. We already know McCullers won't be ready for opening day. Yeah. We've seen the Astros go six-man rotation already. You see the ballpark is great. The team is great. We saw the performance last year. The only thing that's concerning is his swing and miss was below 10% also last year. So that K percentage is unlikely to be maintained unless he gets more swing and miss eventually.
It was 11.7% in AAA, so a little bit better there, but not, like you said, not super elite, but I think it'll probably be the point that he'll probably get a little too hyped for me, but he's
what's too hyped? What at what point is it too much for you?
Where he's probably going to go, which is like the 12th round, 11th round, somewhere in there.
All right, so if he's there at 200, are you taking him?
So 200 puts me in the
13th,
14th. 13th, 14th. Yeah, I think that's about the right range because you're talking like John Gray, Reed Detmers, Andrew Heaney, Patrick Sandoval. I think I'd probably take Detmers and Sandoval instead.
I like that range, by the way.
I do like that range. Sonny Gray's right in there too, who I always like. I think that's probably about the right range. I think the high 100s, probably not. I think there's other pitchers in there I like more. But yeah, there's low 200s, probably about the right range. I think he might even go a little higher than that. I'd probably go like 175, I bet, is like his main event ADP, assuming that, McCullers doesn't make some miraculous recoveries. We don't expect that to happen.
I'm full out on McCullers. I mean, he was so good when he came back, but it's the forearm again. If he's at pick 300, fine. But there's no IR slots in the NFBC. And in the main event, even like your round 20th pick, you don't want to have it. Okay, now there's your stash. That means you're not getting a prospect. Which is fine, but
so many pitchers get hurt anyway. I don't want to start with one that's hurt. Like there is a spot where I take him where I'm like, well, if I get two more injuries, I got to drop him in week three, then okay. But I just prefer not to. I prefer someone else to do it.
Yep.
The aforementioned Trevor Rogers is next on our list. ADP is 258. That ADP is a little bit later than I took him in the main event last year, Jeff. It's about 197 picks after I took him last year. I took him at 61 last year as my SP1 in the main event in Vegas. Obviously did not work out well. Still won that league, but did not work out well. Brutal 2020. Came in a lot of hype. 2021 was obviously really, really good. 2.64, 1.15, and then it ballooned to huge last year. Everything went wrong. 5.5 on the ERA, 1.5 on the whip. Strikeout rate dropped 6%. Walk rate went up a little bit. Swing strike rate, you mentioned earlier when we were talking about Rogers real quickly, 14%, which is really, really good number, down to 10.8%. So, not horrible, but, the drop was just – it was crazy. I mean, his whiff rate fell on all three of his pitches. Like, it was across the board. It wasn't like one pitch fell off. The walk rate was up a little bit. What do you do with the new price here?
Oh, I was just going to defer to you. As the Trevor Rogers expert in the podcast, but
clearly I've proven myself to not be the Trevor Rogers.
I held on to him all season long in an online championship, and that did not bear fruit. So.
I had him really long in the main event. It took a long time before I dropped him. Well, first of all, is he going to be a starter for them? Is he going to win that fifth job? I mean, because that's the first.
I don't think it's the fifth job. I think he'll be the fourth starter, won't he be?
I was counting Edward Cabrera ahead of him, but you could probably those two.
A lot of people are counting Edward Cabrera. Yeah. I think he's battling Braxton Garrett still, but
So we got Cabrera, Rogers, and Garrett. I guess we call them three guys for two spots is probably a good way to put it.
Is Johnny Cueto that firmly ensconced in the rotation, or is that a little up for grabs too?
I think he's ensconced to begin the season in the rotation.
Okay. I'm not sure about that. But then again, we'll see. I mean, yeah, he probably is because he's a veteran and all that. But yeah,
you're right. There's enough opportunity there that he'll probably end up getting a shot to start.
My projections suggest I'm not in on Rodgers. Okay. My instinct tells me that buy low is not such a bad idea with him. Bottom end of the range in the last month on the NFBC since February 1st is pick 311. I would need it probably close to that, maybe anywhere from 280 to, 280 and beyond to take him, but I could see it. It'd be just like a dart throw at that point. I'd have to have had like probably six or seven other pitchers on my roster by that point in time. It's like my SP five or six. I could see it.
His strikeout rate did go up in the second half. I mean, he didn't throw as many innings. I have to look at it. He only threw 23 innings in the second half, but it went up a little bit. He was up to 29%. Walk rate was down 6%. So he had like a really small sample of innings where he did look a lot better. I know the ERA wasn't great, but like the metrics in the strikeout and walk look a little bit better. Maybe he fixed something. Maybe something was going on. I think he went down to the minors at some point. Maybe he fixed something. So that little bit of improvement late in the season maybe helps me a little bit, but I'm pretty scarred on this one.
Yeah. You need to get, swing and miss with him because the walks are part of the package.
Yes.
Even when he was really good in 2021, it was like 8.5%. Realize that's part of the package. You want to talk about a guy that's not going to help you in WHIP? Trevor Rogers is not going to help you in WHIP.
Yeah. He was as good as he could be in 2020 when the WHIP was still 1.15, which will help you, but like that's probably the very top end you're going to get.
And you got to get that swing and miss to be able to work out of the jams that you create by walking players.
Agreed. I felt like last year he got two strikes on guys and just could not put people away. Yeah. And if you look at the numbers, it kind of bears itself out.
Yeah. By the way, don't forget about Eury Pérez in Miami. He's in camp. Craig Mish was on our show last week when we were talking Marlins, and he thinks that, he'll be on the team at some point this year too. And, he's one of the best pitching prospects in baseball, if not the best pitching prospect in baseball. So there'll be that's another guy to keep in mind too, is we're looking at that. They may go six man. They may, they might just say, okay, you get a spot. You're out, and that's why they're so willing to trade Pablo Lopez this offseason.
Yeah, they do have a lot of different arms in there. Next thing I want to talk about is his move to Minnesota, Tyler Mahle, former Red. We talked about him a bunch last year being on the Reds. I drafted him in the main event. I don't know if you did. You had him also as well, but he had a lot of shoulder issues last year, which is always very concerning with any kind of pitcher. He says he has no restrictions coming into camp. Be another guy where, strikeouts fell. The strikeout rate fell from 28% to 25%. Walk stayed about the same. His fastball is just really, really good. His fastball was at 205 batting average against last year, 28% whiff rate. You don't really see numbers that high on a fastball except for the really, really good fastball guys. Usually it's the breaking balls where you get the higher whiff rate. The interesting thing with Mahle is I just wonder, if that shoulder was an issue at all points. He was a 26% slider guy in 2021, 11% slider guy in 2022. You just wonder if that was affecting his arm. At his best strikeout pitch, I have to wonder if maybe he just wasn't healthy at all at any point. Are you in on a Tyler Mahle? I guess I call it a bounce back. He was obviously worse in 2022 than he was in 2021 in Minnesota here.
Kind of agnostic. At the time he got dealt, I was like, oh, he finally gets out of Great American Small Park, gets a better team behind him. Yes, I think this is going to be a good time for him. Then the shoulder thing reared up, but it wasn't the first time. Very much like parallels Frankie Montas, actually. They both had the shoulder things happen right before the trade deadline. They got dealt anyhow. And
let's hope his story's a little bit better than Montas's.
Yeah, but that's in the range of outcomes, though, right? Yeah.
Anytime you get a shoulder, it's always concerning. But I think I back in at the price. I think the price last year was like in the 160 to 180 range. I forget. I think I drafted him in the 10th or 11th round. At pick 266, I think there is a decent amount of upside here and a decent amount of floor, too. I don't think he's a guy that's going to kill you. The strikeout, the fastball just it's so good that it keeps him in games pretty well. I kind of like this price. I think that 16th, 17th, 18th round, I do like this price for a bounce back.
Yeah, I can see it.
Another guy who has had some injury issues, but was the first time over 100 innings last year is Carlos Carrasco. He was 3.97 last year, 1.33 whip. So the whip was a little bit high last year, even though he you know, bounced back really well from 2020 was really ugly for Carrasco, where he was never healthy. K rate was up a touch from 2021 to 2022. Never, you're not not at the old Cleveland elite days with Carrasco, where he was, you know, 29% in there. Swing strike rate was down a little bit, but still 12.9%. We've been talking about a lot of swing strike rate numbers. That's a pretty good one compared to some of these guys we've talked about so far. Fastball velocity was down, but he's still an elite chase guy. Gets people to chase pitches, 94th percentile chase rate. I love the price in Carrasco, 285 ADP, you know, middle, you know, like 17th, 18th round. I think he's just a guy that will be really solid for you in there. He's not going to be back to his old days, but I think it's a really solid price for Carrasco.
Yeah, agreed. My projection's pretty tame. I think I only have him for 24 starts. But yeah, I think that's fine though. When you're at that rate, I mean, if he, you know, I understand you want to get him all in, and, you know, you want your pitcher to go be healthy all season. The one thing this is a guy who's
good luck with those. No pitchers are healthy all season.
Yeah, I he's a guy that I would watch the velocity in spring training a little bit, because I think another mile, and maybe the chase rate goes down,
yeah,
because people are able that's to lay point. Off it a little bit more. Something I'd watch for there. Someone said they prefer Senga over Carrasco. Yeah, who wouldn't? Senga's going 100 picks earlier than Carrasco. So at least
is he a full 100 picks higher? I hadn't looked at his ADP.
ADP is 189.
Yeah, you're right. 100 picks higher. So yeah, that's they're not really in the same range there.
Yep.
So a guy who velocity is not an issue is Ronzi Contreras in Pittsburgh. I saw he got a pitch clock violation yesterday, so I laughed. He was on our list here. He was obviously a big K rates in the minors. Like, remember when he got called up last year, everybody was really excited about this. You know, K rates were in the 34% in 2021, 33% in AAA in 2022. Came out to Pittsburgh and, you know, wasn't bad. 3.79 ERA, 1.27 whip, pretty good for the first time through. But K rate was way down, 21.1%. The walk rate's a little concerning, 9.6%. But you look at the swing strike rate, 12.6%. He's going to get some punch outs. Like, he gets enough swings and misses that I think would be good here. The slider's nasty. 163 batting average against, 42% whiff rate last year. I guess my main question for you on Contreras is, you know, obviously he's on the Pirates. You're not going to get a lot of wins, but how many innings do you think he ends up throwing? Are they going to just kind of let him go? You think he's got a leash on him? Where do you think they go with the innings on Ronzi?
That's a good question. I think it probably caps at like 150 or so.
I would love that. I'd take that number right now.
Yeah, I think, yeah, that I'm saying caps.
You know, I don't think you're far, because he threw 120, whatever it is, 125 last year, 124, something like that. About 120. I think that's a good bump up. At ADP 296, like, I'd take 150 innings of this in a second. I really like this price. I like him and Carrasco right in here.
Yeah, the team context is scary.
Yeah,
control's a little scary too.
It is,
and just, you know, like I remember like seeing some breakdowns, and I wish I could give it credit. It might have been pitcher. I think it was pitcher list actually. It broke down like his full on first start, I think, for Pittsburgh, and for Pittsburgh against Colorado, and just, you know, the he wasn't getting guys. The swing and miss on his breaking stuff. It wasn't super sharp. Like he was fooling hitters, but he wasn't like, it wasn't like, oh, he just can't hit it. It was more like, oh, I was expecting this pitch.
Okay.
And Pittsburgh, I mean, let's face it. Every pitcher gets better once they leave Pittsburgh. They don't develop there so many times. That's concerning. And we keep on, you know, I think, you know, Mitch Keller, for instance, you know, is another guy that hasn't taken that next step. Came close last year at times.
He's throwing like 113 at Driveline, though.
Yeah, I know. And then, but unfortunately, Driveline doesn't have their own stadium and their own team. So, yeah.
I love last year, Mitch Keller was the Driveline. I don't even know. He went to one of those places. I think he's a Driveline guy, but, or he was throwing like 100 in February, whatever it was.
Yeah. So I don't know how much of Ronzi I'll have. I had a chance to get him and didn't take him in labor. And I think he went one pick after me, if I recall correctly, pulling up the draft grid now. I saw him go off and I'm like, yeah, that would have been a fun one to have, but I really wasn't in on it at the time. God, where did he go? That, you know, I'm sorry. This is great. Great podcasting here. So I'll just, it'll probably be easier. Just like search for him. That would be, there's a novel concept.
Control F, Jeff.
Yes, I know. I know. Thank you. Thank you. I took, it was late. It's round 23. There's another guy that's on our outline that I regretted missing out on more. Ronzi went really late in our draft.
That is late. That's like pick 350 or something like that.
Yeah. I took a closer spec in Brandon Hughes instead. And then I was like, and then I saw Ronzi go, but more importantly, Kyle Bradish went two picks later to Rudy Gamble. And that's the one I was like, oh, that's who I should have taken.
So let's talk about Kyle Bradish now then, since you brought him up. This was one that I put him on a list and I was like, I'm going to love Kyle Bradish, the second half breakout. I was surprised how, when I got into it, the first half ERA was 7.38, second half was 3.28. He wasn't that much different. The K rate was the same first and second half. The walk rate was actually up. It was just a gigantic BABIP change from first half to second half. I was surprised when I looked. I think that a lot of his second half was just kind of getting a lot luckier than he was in the first half. I was hoping to see a big step up, and I thought I was going to, because there were times where I was throwing Bradish and I was loving it. He's pitches in a park now that's a good place to pitch. I'm a little bit worried. I mean, the price is $347. So like, I think at that price, like, you can't go wrong, but I am not as much in as on Bradish I thought I'd be when I started the deep dive.
Yeah. But was it just because he was exceptionally unlucky early on and this was just a correction, or was he exceptionally lucky late?
He was exceptionally lucky in the second half.
Okay. Okay.
BABIP in the second half was 253. Now he was really unlucky in the first half. It was 396. So yeah, there was definitely some correction.
That's
coming.
Pretty polar there. Oh my gosh.
Really polar. It was great. I couldn't believe when I looked at it. I thought maybe the other stuff would be a little different. It really wasn't. I mean, you look at the first half K rate was 21.7. Second half K rate was 21.9. 8.5 walk rate in the first half, 9.5 walk rate in the second half. So that actually went up. When I looked at it, I couldn't believe how much of it was just literally the BABIP. It was wild. You talk about that making a difference, and boy, was the difference to him. We went from really unlucky to really lucky, and I don't know. I assume we'll land somewhere in the middle, and I was hoping to find, as I look deeper, that I liked the second half as like something that was a little more real.
I like the velocity on him.
Oh, he throws hard, yeah.
Yeah, I think I like the lack of exit velocity against him. I think average exit velocity was 82.5. I mean, that's I think I like that. Our outlook says he has similar, Statcast metrics to Burns and Gallen and Rasmussen. I can't pronounce his name, even though it's a very simple, common name.
Rasmussen?
Yeah, Rasmussen. I guess that's it. If I go Muss instead of Muse, then I'm good. good to know. But yeah, I don't know. There's a sense, or maybe I read something positive about him once and it stuck with me. Anyhow, I want more Bradish in my life.
Yeah. 30 percentile whiff rate, 9 percentile chase rate. I thought those were surprising to me too, with a guy that throws as hard as he does. I was surprised. I thought I was gonna be in for sure. And then when I looked deeper, I wasn't. I mean, it's pick 347. Like, you don't have to be that in to be in, but I thought it was going to be a target for me. And I think it's kind of a guy that I'm okay taking him in there, but not someone I'm pushing up or targeting really.
Fair enough.
Brian Bello, is it Bello or Bello? It's got to be Bello, right?
I think so.
Brian Bello had, we talked about him a little bit last week. He had some forearm tightness, but he did throw a bullpen today. This is a profile that I do like. And obviously I need to see him pitching in games. And forearm tightness is a awful thing to hear for a pitcher. You hate to hear that. It's like oblique tightness for a hitter. I hate hearing it, but.
Yeah, we just mentioned Lance McCullers. Yeah. I mean.
Electric in the minors last year. He threw 96 innings in the minors last year, 34% strikeout rate. He has a few too many walks, I will give you that, but 2.34, 1.04 on the ratios in 96 innings. He did come up and he threw 57 innings in the majors. I do like that. He wasn't very good. It was 4.71, 1.78, but I like he got his feet wet a little bit, he made 11 starts in the majors. Strikeout rate went way down in the majors. We see that with a lot of guys that their first time up, but I like this profile. I think that he has a chance to be pretty good off the bat. He's been working with Pedro Martinez a lot been talked about there. Pick 346. I'm going Bayo over Bradish, believe it or not.
I will join you on Bayo watch. I got him in labor.
I like it.
Thank you.
And thank you to everybody in the chat room telling me it is Bayo.
Yes. Yes. And thank you for setting me up so nicely there on that.
You're welcome. But, that's what I do.
I got him in the 27th round. Now, of course, the fact that he might start the year in the minors is concerning.
Yeah, it's a problem.
Forearm
tightness, slow start just doesn't help someone that, needed to make a splash in camp, which is concerning. I don't love that, but I like the profile. I need to see him pitch in a couple games and see what happens here, but I do like the profile here. And they have a weird weird rotation. We talked about it a little bit last week. They have Sale and then Kluber, Pivetta, James Paxton, maybe Garrett Whitlock, maybe. We just don't know what this rotation is going to look like.
Tanner Houck, maybe.
Tanner Houck, yeah. Maybe. That's a good point, too. We have no idea what it's going to look like in a month when the season starts. It could be anywhere.
This is the downside to drafting early is guys like this. Him and Hayden Wesneski on the Cubs, who I also grabbed in LABR on Tuesday. Both of those guys could start the year in AAA, or they could both be striking out a ton of guys. And, they're dart throws, and I might have two guys I have to replace in the first fab period.
And if you want to read about Jeff's labor team, you did write an article about that on the site, right?
I did. It's just posted today. Nice. Check it out. rotowire.com/pod.
I set that up so well. You set me up well on Hayden Wesneski too. That's my next guy to talk about. I picked up Wesneski in the main event last year. He's really solid for me. 2.18 ERA, 0.94 innings in his 22 innings. I picked him up really late in the year. I think he made his last four starts all in September. He doesn't throw hard. He only throws about 93, but you look at his minor league numbers in 2022 across AAA with the Yankees and the Cubs, 392, 115, and 110 innings. In 2021 across three levels, he was 325, 112. Really good ratios. He's just a good control guy. He didn't walk many guys when he came up. He only had 5.3% walk rate. And then the minors in AAA with the Yankees last year was only 7.5%. So he's a good control guy, which I like. I think he's just someone that's just really – he'll be really solid. I don't think – you're obviously not going to get the ratios we got last year. But I think he's could be a mid to high 3 ERA guy. I think the whip will be decent enough because of the lack of walks. I just think I'd like get a guy like this in the 21st, 22nd round. He's in the mix for the number 5 job. That's the one issue here is he may not start the season with the Cubs in the rotation. So that's the problem here. You look at the Cubs rotation and it's probably, although Justin Steele had some injury stuff today. So that could be a pushback there.
These have a way of changing really fast.
Really fast with pitchers. It's him or like Adrian Sampson, I guess, is maybe the two guys going for the fifth spot. If I look at their depth chart, I mean, I would hope they would go Wesneski over Adrian Sampson, but who knows here. And then you got Drew Smyly in there too. I think there's going to be an opportunity for Wesneski pretty quick if it's not right away.
Yeah, I agree. Oh, man. I want him over a bunch of like Drew Smyly and all these non-upside sort of guys. He's one of the few guys in that rotation that has like really good palpable upside.
Yeah, I like it. I think the price is really nice right now. Obviously, if he won a job, he would start to move up a little bit. But I do like the profile. I think just someone that won't hurt you. And in the 330s, like you get someone that doesn't hurt you, that's a win right there.
Absolutely.
Some of the chats asking about remembering when Mike Piazza was on Baywatch. I definitely remember that episode. It was weird that he's wearing his jersey and swinging the bat on the beach. It's always it's just such a weird scene. Last guy in this range I want to ask you before we drop into a few guys a little more deeper. We talked about Andrew Painter earlier, the 19-year-old potentially in the mix for the Phillies' number 5 job. We talked about him giving up a home run to Schwarber in camp, and it was a good little clip on social media. He was a 13th overall pick in 2021. He's a high riser here. Like I said, he's 19 years old. He does turn 20 on April 10th, so possibly if he makes the rotation, could pitch a game in the majors at 19. He pitched 103 innings last year across A and double A, 1.56 ERA, 0.89 whip. Obviously really, really good. 155 strikeouts on his 3 innings. This is a guy with a ton of upside. Obviously he's 19. You have to preface everything you say with that. If he breaks camp with a team, are you willing to pay a little bit up on this price here? What do you do with a 19-year-old guy that obviously has electric stuff?
I will. And I think I don't think he starts the year in the majors, though. I think
Falter's a good enough option that they don't feel like they need to rush him right away.
But just like you saw with the Cubs, one guy goes down, all of a sudden you don't even have to make that decision. But they might manage him. It's him and Grayson Rodriguez are two of the toughest guys to put a price on.
Yep.
Because they look like they're going to be really good, but you have to question their usage a little bit there, and that's always tricky.
Yeah, we talked about with Rodriguez a couple weeks ago. If you get those, if he pitches innings, but they're all 4 inning starts, it's really hard fantasy wise because you don't get any wins out of that. The strikeouts are a little limited by the inning usage. It's really tough to use that. And Rodriguez's price is obviously a lot higher. They've pretty much said he's going to make the opening day rotation. But you're right, if they go, he's got a lot of 4 inning stints. It's hard to use in fantasy.
Yeah, exactly. And that might be how they do it right away. Or they could just say, okay, Ranger Suarez, you're a swing man. We'll have you start sometimes. We'll have you in the bullpen sometimes. That could be a way to go around it too.
Yeah, I actually kind of like that idea. I don't think that's a bad idea right there. I imagine that, or you could piggyback him and Falter together. There's a lot of ways you could put it together, but it'd be a lot of fun to have a 19-year-old dude throwing gas on for the Phillies. That'd be a fun watch every fifth day.
Yeah, exactly.
Before we get to a few more names, a little deeper in the starting pitcher list here, a note from our sponsors at Fantrax. Fantrax is the most customizable fantasy platform in the industry, offering the greatest fantasy experience for all kinds of baseball leagues, whether it be Dynasty, Keeper, Redraft, or Best Ball Leagues. Are you coming from another service? Fantrax makes that easy as well, as they can import any of your current leagues and customize as you need. Fantrax offers the most in-depth player pool in the industry, including minor league players. Do you need a customizable commissioner service for your fantasy league? Fantrax offers more customization than any other platform. You can use your scoring system, FAB, head-to-head scheduling, all kinds of different various categories. Fantrax offers custom solutions for all that and more, and it's all free. Sign up for free today and be entered to win an official MLB signed jersey from Vladimir Guerrero Jr. Sign up and go to Fantrax.com/RotoWire and sign up today. That's FANTRAX.com/RotoWire. Fantrax, the home of fantasy sports. So, Jeff, we've gone way too far without talking about a couple of A's pitchers. I want to talk about a couple here, one in the mid-300s and one in the high 400s. The first is Ken Waldichuk, who got called up last year, made a couple starts, actually had a big, really good start on the last day of the season. I had a lot of guys not do well for me late in the season. He was one that the last day was nice clicking on that box. So I think he shut out the Angels over six innings or something like that.
But so did you the next day too. So, but
but his
Angels were horrific offensively late in the season.
Luckily his stats counted a lot more than mine did. 34 innings across the majors. He made seven starts getting called after he got called by the A's. 4.93, not great there. 1.21 whip is workable there. K rate was 22.5%. Walk rate 6.8%. This is a good home park. It's a really, really bad team, as we have explained many times when it comes to Oakland A's baseball. But he was a big K guy in the minors, though. You look at the K rate in the majors, it wasn't high. It was only 34 innings, but he had a lot of seasons where he's a big K guy in the minors. He's 13.4 Ks per nine in the minors across 234 innings. You look at all his minor league innings put together. Huge swinging strikeout numbers too. He had a 15% season, a 16% season, a 17% in rookie ball. Like a lot of swing and miss here. His slider and his changeup were both over 30% whiff rate in a small sample in the majors. I hate to take A's players, but man, this is the one I might be in on. ADP's 366. I think he's a guy that I'm going to take like right before we get to the second break and just get him on my team. I really like the profile here.
Yeah. It's just the organizational context. They still haven't traded Ramon Laureano. I remember that thread that you were involved in on Twitter there. That still is one little shoe to drop. But, yeah, I actually like his talent. I like his skill. Wins do matter.
He's not going to get many wins.
It's like drafting Reds pitchers. Same thing.
If he just gets, like, all 24 of their wins himself, though, like, that'd be fun.
That'd be pretty badass. Yeah. It'd be Carlton-esque.
It would be very – that's a good drop right there. We're aging ourselves a little bit. Carlton had a year where he, like – what do you have, like a third of the Phillies wins or like 35% of the Phillies wins or something like that?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah. The other guy I wanted to ask you, do you like Waldichuk a little bit? Not maybe as much as me, but you like him a little bit.
I'm learning about him. I don't know enough about him. I think it's hilarious that we talked about Wesneski and Waldichuk, and you know the two guys that the Yankees got in those trades aren't going to pitch this year, Montas. And it's not hilarious to the pitchers, but in Efros, that these guys are actually pretty good.
Yeah. That's just true. The weird thing with the A's is that we don't know who their five stars are going to be. It's weird. They really have a glut of okay guys. So they've got a lot of guys. It seems like the stories I read is that Fuji from Japan is going to pitch. Is going to start. Rusinski coming over from the Korean League, used to be with the Blue Jays, and then Paul Blackburn. Like those three guys are pretty much locked into rotation spots, which gives you, you know, two spots for a bunch of guys, including Waldichuk. They got Adam Ahlers in there. And all the other guy I want to talk about, Kyle Muller. His ADP is after the 30th round in a 15-teamer. It's 490. He's a guy that was someone that's really, really good in AAA last year. I remember in AAA, we were always like, when's Kyle Muller getting called up so we could all pick him up in FAB for the Braves? He was 3-4-1, 119, 134 innings last year for the Braves. 29% strikeout rate in AAA last year, 7.5% walk rate. His walks were an issue in 2021. He seems like he really fixed that, down to 7.4%. Walks are way down. Swing strike rate, 14%. And if I'm not wrong, Mark Kotze called him a mix of Madison Bumgarner and I can't even remember the other name. We called him a mix of like two stud all-star pitchers this week.
Yeah, well, that's Okay, that's the sort of thing I'm not going to pay attention to in spring training.
It's the exact example of something not to talk about. I went back. The funny thing is I went back. I'm like, this quote seems insane. So I went back and looked at it. It was a mix of Mark Mulder and Madison Bumgarner. That was it. Yeah. And then I listened to the actual quote from Conseil, and he said he's like Bumgarner because he's big, he's lefty, he likes to hunt a lot.
Well, hey. Does he like dirt bike a lot too?
I'm like, you took that quote and said he was a mix. It was so, I was like, I'm going to throw that quote away. But Mulder seems like, I mean, he came over in the Sean Murphy trade. Someone they seem to like, and people really liked him in AAA last year. He's not like every guy's ever going to be a one or a two, but like, I think it kind of profiles like a solid three for them. And I think that they've got a lot of guys, but none of them are really good. I think that Mulder's going to get a chance to pitch pretty soon. I think he's going to be pretty decent. I think he'll be a good kind of fill-in bench starter that maybe is a guy that you can use a little more than that in the second half.
Yeah, and I wouldn't count out J.P. Sears yet either.
That was the other name I was thinking. I couldn't think of the last name. That's the name, yeah. You're right. Speaking of Yankees trades.
And Kaprielian seems like that shoulder is a big problem again. So
it is. I mean, they're trying to get him around, and if he gets to healthy, they probably give him a spot. But yeah, I think that's I think we're a step away from that at the moment.
I know we're doing starting pitchers, but it is A's talk time. So who's their closer?
It's a really good question. I mean, the funny thing is the A's don't pay anybody, and they paid Trevor May pretty decently. I tend to think they'll probably mix and match a little bit, but I think May's probably the one that gets the brunt of it early on. You look at, he was pretty good in 2021. He was a 3.6 ERA, 1.26 WHIP, big strikeout rate in the majors in 2020. Did pitch a lot last year, only 25 innings. I think it's May to start, but I think it's maybe him 2/3 of the time, mix it around. I think it's a committee, but May would be the guy that I picked for the first outing.
Yep. Okay.
Let's see, guy. I'm going to ask you about since we're sticking in the young guy range. A guy that got a little bit of spice yesterday is Mackenzie Gore. Was throwing 96 in his outing for the Nats. Former third overall pick, obviously a really, really, really good high level pedigree prospect. He was traded. He was in the Juan Soto trade, right? Yes.
Yes, he was.
Not good in the majors last year. 20 to 70 innings, 4.5 ERA, 1.47 WHIP. The walk rate was really a problem, 12%. Are you in on the Mackenzie Gore pedigree here? The 96 in spring training, ADP is 370. I assume that's going up a little bit after yesterday. But where are you on this formerly highly regarded prospect?
I mean, he got hurt so many times. And he got hurt again last year. I mean, he was super trendy in draft season, like the last week or two of draft season last year. And he was fine until he got hurt. Yeah. But then he got hurt, and that's kind of the point. And then you look at, like, he was great. Oh, and he had a 1.47 WHIP. Yeah. Okay. And he's going to be on a team. Speaking of no wins, which I think the Nats lineup might be more depressing than the A's.
They're both plus 280 for most losses in the major leagues. They are the two, I guess you call them the favorites. I don't know.
Leaders in the clubhouse.
The Reds
are going to give them a good strong run for their money.
Oh, the Reds will be better. The Reds will be better than them.
Yeah, definitely. Clearly better.
The Nationals lineup is bad. You're right. I knew it was, but I'm looking at it. It's gross.
Abandon all wins, ye who enter here.
Jaime Candelaria is hitting fourth.
That's just don't. Just don't. Just stop. Yeah.
Wow, that's not bad. Good.
They want to, at least, you know what? At least they have the trophy. You know,
they do. It's crazy that they won it. What was that, 2018?
Yeah, it wasn't that long ago.
Nobody left from that team.
Strasburg's still there.
Jeff, they have nobody left from that team. I mean, so, and they're young guys too. Soto, Turner, Rendon. I mean, Scherzer's obviously not young, but I mean, everybody's gone. It's wild.
The Soto thing is, because that was supposed to be like the bridge from that, team to the next great Nats team. They've had some bad luck. Seeing who's the prospect shortstop? Carter Kieboom. Him getting hurt and not developing. Victor Robles not developing. You know, they're counting on some of things like that happen. That they gave the long term contract to Corbin, and Corbin didn't work out. He blew up immediately after that, and that was to the exclusion of like keeping Rendon, for instance. There, I don't know if it was to exclusion, like they chose to go Corbin over Rendon. Maybe Rendon just left. But point is, they didn't keep him, and yeah. And not that Rendon's been good. He's been hurt a lot with the Angels, but they just lost everybody. They had veterans like Howie Kendrick was never going to stick around. Adam Eaton was not a building block. He worked out for that year.
And Justin Mason in the chat corrects me. It was actually 2019, the Nats won the World Series. So even a year closer, that's wild.
Yes.
Some of the chat asks who's hitting fourth for the A's. I assume it's probably Jesus Aguilar. Seth Brown hits third, Aguilar hits fourth, and Langeliers probably hits fifth, something like that. But
yeah,
probably better than Jaime Candelario.
Maybe, arguably, yeah.
Arguably. Another guy, since we're talking Nats, Josiah Gray was someone that had a lot of buzz last year. He was a big prospect over in the from the Dodgers. And was that the Scherzer trade? Probably the Scherzer trade. Trey Turner and Scherzer were the same trade, right?
Yes, they were.
Rough 2022 for Josiah Gray, formerly a really big prospect for the Dodgers. Cincinnati first, then the Dodgers. 5.02 ERA, 1.36 WHIP. Swing strike rate fell off pretty badly from 2020. He only threw 70 innings in 2021, but fell off pretty badly. 14.1%, 11.4%. You and I talked about Gray last year. Like, look at the swing strike rate. Look at the strikeouts. Like, this is coming pretty quick. They didn't come, and the walks stayed. So that's a problem there. Ton of hard contact too. His barrel rate.
Ton of home runs.
Yeah, barrel rate is over 10%. His home runs are over two per, like usually like high ones per nine or mid ones per nine is really good. His over two per nine each of the last two seasons. He gives up a ton of home runs, ton of fly balls, 49% fly ball rate. As I got deeper into Josiah Gray, I think he's due to explode any outing. I don't think I want any part of this.
If I recall correctly, he was reasonable in the first half and just blew up over the second half. I don't know if that doesn't really, that's not an argument in favor.
You're right, though. He was 4-4 in the first half and over 6 in the second half.
Yeah. That's a concern. But, I'll root for him from afar.
27% strikeout rate in the first half, 18.7% in the second half.
Yeah. No play for Mr. Gray is what we're saying here.
Wow. I actually got that reference. That's a rough fall off. And I would be concerned about what was going on there. What about in Yankee land? What happens now that Frankie Montas is done for this season? He's having surgery on his shoulder. It looks like Domingo Germán may slide into that fifth spot. You know, the previously a guy who's been good for them, been in their rotation before. His ADP is on the rise. When I did this, looked at this last week, it was like 430s. Now he's 407. 3.61, 116 ERA in 2022 across his 72 innings. Strikeout rate has really fallen off with Germán, though. He's got 27% in 2018, 26% in 2019, 24% in 2021, under 20% last year. Swing and strike rate really crashed last year, 14.5% in 2021, 11.3% in 2022. But pick 400, potential for a lot of wins if he sticks in the rotation. Are you willing to take a chance on Domingo Germán?
Maybe. I mean, at that price, I'm almost willing to take a chance on anyone.
He's really a really good whip guy. Even in 2021, his ERA was over 4.5. His whip was 1.18. Just in walk guys. You know, the walk rate's about 6.5% each of the last 3 years. But weirdly, really good whip guy the last 3 years. And that's hard to find late in drafts, too.
Yeah, it is. I would say, I would think, though, that the Yankees won't be content with just staying with him. I think they'll try to improve on that.
Yeah.
I think now that Montas is up
before the season, or are you saying like at the trade deadline?
Yeah, probably by the trade deadline, okay. If not sooner, if they can. I mean, he could turn in a season like, you know, he's capable of having that big season, but I think he'll have a pretty short leash is what I'm trying to say. If he gets off to a bad start, they'll find somebody else. And it could be Luis Gil coming back from injury later on. Could be a prospect. I think that, you know, and we'll see. I mean, Nestor Cortez is dealing with a hammy right now too. They might give Clark Schmidt another chance. I think that there'll be some fluidity here in this situation.
You answered the question before I was going to ask you. I was going to ask you who you thought if they had to be coming up, there was like a huge prospect. I guess it's probably Clark Schmidt that would be the next lineup if they wanted to go with someone else.
Yeah, I think so. Most of their top prospects are all hitters though. You know, they have a number of top 100 prospects and they're all hitters.
Jason Dominguez, you got Volpe, Peraza, and Cabrera.
Austin Wells, you know.
They do have a lot of guys coming up. That's just not fair. Last guy I want to ask you about, it kind of goes with the Andrew Painter discussion we had earlier. Bailey Falter is way down here, too. We're talking I kind of paired him with Germán because you're looking for cheap wins. You're looking for guys on really good offenses that aren't going to hurt you in the ratios. Falter last year was decent. He was 3.86, 1.21 WHIP. He He's not a strikeout guy, but he is a control guy. His walk rate was under 5% last year. That helps with the whip. But he only 21.2% strikeout guy, although he's 29% in the minors, so maybe there's a little more coming there. His Statcast page is rough. There's not a lot to love there. He only throws 91, except the walk rate. The walk rate's obviously really good there, but the rest of it's pretty blue. Has a 30% whiff rate on his curve and slider, so maybe get a few more strikeouts. He just feels like a guy to me, like he may be a streamer for cheap wins, but I would find it hard to get too excited about him.
Yeah, and I wonder if the shift rules protected a team like the Phillies, who have two corner outfielders that don't exhibit a whole lot of range. But if you protect the ball from getting to them, prevent them from having to cover too much ground,
yeah,
well, then it's okay. And then maybe that ballpark helps them a little bit too, as far as it goes. But I almost wonder, like, a pitch to contact guy gets hurt a little bit more under the new shift rules, and Falter strikes me as that type of guy that could get hurt by that.
So it's actually a really interesting point, because we've talked so much about hitters, how they're affected by the shifts. We don't really hear people talk about pitchers as much. You're right. A contact guy, that can be tough with the, especially with their defense, like you mentioned, the left and right field. That's an interesting point. I like that.
Yeah. And it's not like Hoskins covers a lot of ground at first base either. By the way, Hoskins might not be ready for the start of the season. You saw that note. He had a meniscus thing repaired in the offseason. They just disclosed that now, and he's not going to play spring training games to the end of the week. He may be fine.
Yeah,
but this seems like one of those sneaky reveals that you're like,
The Starling Marte one was weird too. Like, it was like he had some kind of leg thing.
Double groin surgery.
Like, that does not sound like a fun surgery, by the way. No. Double groin is like, there's not much that sounds a lot worse than that.
Yeah.
It's weird how we get the sneaky, like, just the drops like that. Before we jump out of here, real quick, just a few quick late relievers I wanted to ask you about. After pick 225, are there any, like, particular relievers you're like, you know what, I really want to get this guy? Is anybody you're really targeting here in this, I guess we'll call it the second half of the draft, that you like as a sneaky closer guy?
Yeah, you put up a pretty good list there. I wanted to say Fairbanks, but he's not going that late. He's 194 now. I think Carlos Estevez is interesting, but we mentioned the competition's that kid, Ben Jacobs out of University of Tennessee.
Ben Joyce.
Why did I say Jacobs? I don't know. I'm weird.
Who's Ben Jacobs? Is that someone?
Probably was. Maybe a Reds prospect of yours.
Running back for the Giants is Brandon Jacobs, right?
Yeah. I'm trying to think. Who's the guy that – there was a Ben something or other that the Reds traded to Philly, and then he went to Korea, and then he came back. Good story.
Ben Grieve?
No, he's a pitcher.
I was sure Ben Grieve was making the Hall of Fame.
Yeah. I do like Carlos Estevez, by the way, and Matt Gibson brought him up. I do like him, but yeah, I mean, the competition is the kid. But I think Estevez, I mean, the Angels made a point of going and getting him. Now, getting out of Colorado is not necessarily a panacea. It's almost like Colorado permanently ruins pitchers sometimes. You know, you're like, oh, Ubaldo's finally out of Colorado. He's going to be amazing. He wasn't amazing. It's just one example, but Hampton was never that great after leaving Colorado either. I know my references are all very topical, but point is, it's not necessarily like, okay, he's fine, he's safe now, but Estevez can pitch. He can be okay at times. So I think but they also have plenty of options, and Nevin will drive you crazy. Yeah. So that, you know, as much as I like him, I'm not like, oh yeah, all in on him.
Yeah, I think the all-in on Estevez, because of the fact that I think he's probably the first guy to get the job. I looked at him as a pitcher. I'm just kind of okay on him. 20% strikeout rate doesn't fire me up for a closer. I don't know. He seems just okay to me. I looked at his pitches, and he throws 70% fastballs. The whiff rate's only 21%. The slider only gets a 21% whiff rate too. Like, I don't think the fastballs are coming at all any point.
Yeah,
I agree. The strikeouts, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I agree about that. Evan Phillips was on your outline. I love the skills. I don't trust the role, because and a lot of people are saying, you know, the closer is gonna be someone not on the roster. I could see that happening. I mean, last year they traded for Kimbrel super late. Was it last year? Yeah, it was last year, right? For AJ Pollock.
Man, time goes by. I think you're right.
I think we were in Palm Springs for like 2 days.
It was 2021. He was with the Dodgers all year last year.
Okay. Yeah. So
he moved way up in draft prices last year. He was like the sixth or seventh closer draft, I think, last year.
Yeah. No, the trade to the Dodgers. That's the one I'm talking about. Last year.
That was 2021. He pitched. He was all year with the Dodgers last year.
I thought it was he was in trade in spring training, wasn't he?
Unless It could be spring training. Oh, you're right. It wasn't spring training. I was thinking during the season. He got traded during the season 2021. But you're right. The Dodgers was spring training last year. You're right.
Yeah. Okay. It was
that's when his price spiked.
Yeah, he was traded to the White Sox the year before in season. Yeah,
you're right.
Yeah,
from the Cubs. I was looking at the two teams in 2021. But you're right. It was spring training last year. That's right.
For the great Nick Madrigal. It was the Cubs to White Sox trade. Madrigal's out of a job now. It's kind of
crazy. He was going to hit 340 for his whole career.
Yeah, and that's why I missed on Stephen. Nick Madrigal is why I missed on Stephen Kwan last year. Because it's Madrigal writ large, but no, Kwan's actually a legitimate, real good hitter.
You're right. That's right. I remember now. You remember that Kimmel got moved up, and then he just went flying up ADP because obviously he's gonna be the Dodgers closer. I love Evan Phillips. His ADP is 235, so that's about the 16th round. I think it's definitely committed to start in LA. It'd have to be like someone really wins the job. The problem is that Daniel Hudson's really good too. Daniel Hudson was 2.9 WHIP last year, the 31% K rate. I only threw 24 innings, but you look at 2021, 51 innings, he was 331, 108 with a 36% strikeout rate. So as much as you look at Evan Phillips and he's over to the 90th percentile, every Statcast metric across the board, his slider is unbelievable. 42% whiff rate. He throws that 44% of the time. He's awesome. But Daniel Hudson's a really good option too. I think they're going to go kind of getting saves is going to be frustrating with those guys.
Yeah. Bruzdar Gretterall is good too. I mean,
what's the Dodgers? They just, everybody they throw out there is freaking good.
I think I will have a little Evan Phillips though. At that price.
So that price is round 16. So you figure you probably, if you do it, is he has to be your third closer? I guess he's probably going to be your second. You're not going to have two closers.
Honestly, I might take it. I'm doing the 12, the RotoWire Online Championship tomorrow night. I'm more inclined to take that chance than the 12. Because if you miss there, it's not as harmful.
And it's
but
round,
if you hit,
20, round 20, it's your third guy. And if it hits, it's huge.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like that too.
Yeah, it could be Hudson's the guy, but Hudson's coming off an injury. I'm not guaranteed on that. Justin Mason thinks it's going to be Hudson.
I just don't think there's going to be a guy. I think that there's going to be mixing and matching. I think Hudson and Phillips will be the ones who get the most opportunities, but I think it's going to mix and match pretty good.
Yeah. I mean, it did cost them last year in the playoffs that they didn't have a guy. Although
I think they would love to have a guy by August that they're like, all right, this is going to be the one thrown out there.
But the guy they traded for was supposed to be the guy was Kimbrel, who lost the job in the end of the regular season. In fact, they lost it in September. You're a team that had 100+ wins. Trades their closer out in September. I mean, that's, you never see that happening.
Yeah, but he was that was the King, pure King Craig Kimbrel experience last year. That was every time he came in, you just felt a little nervous. Last guy I want to ask you about before we jump out of here, someone who's getting a little bit of buzz and moving up in ADP is in Chicago with Ronaldo Lopez. Obviously, Liam Hendricks has the health issue he's dealing with. Kendall Graveman is kind of the presumed next guy up, but Ronaldo Lopez is interesting. He's someone that people loved as a starter like four or five years ago and just never fully worked out. But you look at him as a reliever over the last 2 years. They converted him to a reliever in 2021. He was all starts in 2020. But last year, 65 innings as a reliever. He made one start, but I think it was like an opener kind of start. 2.76 ERA, 0.95 whip, 25% strikeout rate. Good, doesn't jump off the page, but you look at the walk rate, 4.3%. Yeah. That's really nice. But the swinging strike rate, 13.9%. You look at velocity. This guy that threw 94, 95. Average fastball last year was 97.1. He's clearly a move to the bullpen, gas it out for inning kind of guy. And it's really just back-to-back years of the whip under one. I think this is someone who's going to move before we get to main event drafts. His ADP right now, the last 3 weeks, is 370. He is not getting past the second break. I think he's going in the late 200s, somewhere in there. I think people are going to really jump on Ronaldo Lopez. Looking at the pitching spot here, I mean, Kendall Graveman is just okay. I know he had that stint with Seattle where he was throwing, 99-mile-an-hour pitches with movement, but Kendall Graveman has not scared me as someone that's going to, keep and hold that job if he does end up getting the job. The whip last year was 1.4. That's really rough for a closer. Too many guys on base. I think Lopez is going to be moving, and I think I'm willing to take the shot on it as he moves up.
Dude, walk rate of, 4% last year.
Yeah, awesome.
You just single-handedly moved him, 50 picks up right there. This is the striker.
If only I had that power, that would be nice.
Oh, you have that power. You just know how to use it wisely.
I could get Victor Robles back in the top 100 if I had that power.
so fast can make your head spin. Yeah. Ronaldo Lopez over Jorge Lopez. Let's put it that way.
I agree there.
I think a lot of people do. I mean, let's face it. Duran goes before Lopez anyhow, as the case may be. I think he does at least. Jorge's at 265 since February 1st in all NFBC drafts. And Durant is at 154. Yeah, it's not even close. Yeah, but yeah, I put some respect on Reynaldo's name. I'm with you on that one there.
I think he's gonna be a mover. I'm not breaking ground. There's a lot of people that do like him. I've seen some people tweet about him, but I mean, you give me a whip under one last 2 years. He's clearly a much different guy as a reliever, and I think he's gonna end up being the one. If I had to bet on most saves in the Chicago bullpen, it'd be Reynaldo Lopez.
Yep.
Anybody else pitcher-wise you want to talk about? The funny thing is I thought we were going to combine this in last week, and it turned out to be his own podcast. There's a lot of late pitchers to talk about. Anybody else that was on your mind that we didn't hit? I tried to hit the most interesting kind of fun one to talk about.
No, I think we're pretty good, and it saves us for future podcasts when something else comes up and catches our eye.
We will definitely have plenty of that. So I want to thank everybody for listening. Thanks to Fantrax and Underdog for their sponsorship of the podcast this preseason. We really, really appreciate them for that. If you want to follow Jeff on Twitter, he's at Jeff_Erickson. I am at Scott Jenstead. We will be on there talking a lot of baseball here over the next month as drafts really, really get going. I know I always say that, but drafts are really getting going right now. I'm talking about a lot of signups. TGFBI starts tomorrow. Yes, Jeff?
Yeah. Yogurt is going. What spot are you drafting in, Yogurt?
15.
Okay. Are you happy with that?
I am, because it's a slow draft and I put the turns at the top on purpose.
So smart. Very good. Yeah, I'm drafting third, I think. I'm happy with that. We'll see which way I go. I mean, I'm not quite sure which way I'm going to go with that. If I don't have any Julio in my life yet, so I might go that way if it comes to me. We'll see otherwise.
I'm hoping to get some KDS up there in the main events just so I can do that exact thing.
Yeah. So looking forward to Yogurt starting. It should be fun. Got a good league. DJ Short's right before me in the draft, so that's a tough guy to have right next to me. But like a lot of good players in the league. I don't want to exclude anybody by omitting someone. So
I feel like that was a shot at everybody not named DJ Short in your league. That felt like a challenge.
Well, it's just because he's drafting immediately before me. That's all. But yes.
I do. I know myself in slow drafts. I know I get frustrated. So I decided to do something about that and actually put change my KDS for that. So I actually do like the end of the draft. So I think it's going to be an interesting build from back there. I do. I love the first two guys. I'm hoping to get a pitcher and a hitter, but we'll see how it goes.
Yeah, I always pride myself on being very calm and patient about it and then tweeting about it like 37 seconds later when I'm getting impatient.
Patient about it, and then after 4 minutes you text me telling me how slow you're
exactly driving. Exactly. Yeah. I'm such a hypocrite.
I am. I'm just fully admitting that I'm a miserable someone who does not have a lot of patience for much.
Yeah, and I'm gonna have Yogurt, FSJ, and then I think Raz Slam starts start this week or next week. It's soon. Yeah.
I feel like it's usually a week after.
Yeah. And I'm going to try to be very good about it. No promises though.
Yeah. Beautiful. Well, thanks everybody for listening. We do really appreciate it. We'll be back at you next Sunday night talking a ton more baseball. So hope everybody has a really good week and take care.